Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, it's not just the young adults. I need to read this. No, the college YA is timeless to the world. I not to mention, it is definitely a short time. Just reading coming to day's story, I am here to celebrate all interest of this genre. Join us, please show YA today.
Greetings and welcome to YAA. I'm your host today, W.G. Prater. Jeff Adams is away on assignment. And today joining us is our very special guest. We have Michael J. Bowler. Hi, Michael. How are you?
I'm doing great, Will. How about yourself?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. And for those of us that are those people that might be listening that are not familiar with you, Michael, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself as an author?
Well, I grew up in Northern California, and I came down to Los Angeles to go to graduate school for filmmaking, and I did get a degree in filmmaking and made some very forgettable, low-budget horror movies, which I wrote or co-wrote and co-directed or directed. And then I've been teaching high school for the last, 25 years or more, and in various other capacities, I've spent almost all of my time around teenagers and kids in various volunteer endeavors. So writing books for teens and for kids is a natural for me because I actually spend more time around kids than I do around people my own age. So I really have a good feel of how they think and what they want and what's important to them. So that's why I write these books for teenagers.
Very awesome. And I'm sure that as a YA author, working with younger adults does definitely help in your perspective. Do you have, now, is Spinner your first novel, or are there other novels that came before this one?
Actually, Spinner is my eighth book that I've had published since 2011. That's when I put the first one out. And all of them but one are for teenagers. The other one, A Matter of Time, would be more young adult. I consider young adult, because in this country, young adult is 18 and older. I really personally don't like 13-year-olds being called young adults because it's adultifying them that they shouldn't be. So all of my books are suitable for teenagers, and even A Matter of Time is also, and young adults. So this is book number 8.
Awesome. Now, I actually, I love YA. YA is one of my favorite genres to read because, like it says in the intro, it's good for people who have ADD or ADHD. If you have an issue with keeping your attention in a book, YA is a great genre to read. But what I really like about this book that kind of sets, and by this book I'm referring to Spinner, I like the fact that it incorporates a main character who has what most people would term a disability, but I really feel like he makes it work for him rather than against him, as society would sometimes dictate. What made you decide that you were going to encapsulate a main character that is in a wheelchair but still is kind of kick-ass?
Well, I myself grew up with a disability. I've been hard of hearing since birth, and until maybe when I went to college, that's when finally there were some hearing aids made that would help me. So I was really on my own growing up and had to compensate for that disability where there was no one else in my world who was hard of hearing. And I think that's what led me into teaching special ed in high school. And I knew a kid, a very impressive kid who was in a wheelchair. I had him for 4 years, who could do almost anything that anybody else could do except walk. And that inspired me. And all of the kids in this book have disabilities of one kind or another. And they're all based on, sort of loosely based on kids that I taught. And all the disabilities, including ADHD, are very real. But I wanted to show that, just like Alex in his wheelchair, that doesn't hold him back, that these kids can be just as successful. In fact, they can even be better human beings than people who do not have disabilities.
Well, I think you do a great job of making Alex a very likable character. Now, I don't want to give away too much of the book, obviously, because we want people to go out and buy a copy of Spinner, which if you're interested in buying a copy, the buy links and a link to more information about Michael are available both on this episode page and on www.writersonlinenetwork.com. And you can just go into the YAA page and find out more information both about Michael and about his book. Let's talk a little bit about spinning. What is spinning?
Well, it's a term that Alex uses to describe what he does. It's kind of based on me. I'm sort of a very empathic person, and I tend to, especially with some of the very troubled kids that I've worked with and that are incarcerated kids, and they, you know, they share their pain and their stories with me, and I really absorb all that into me. In Alex's case, he can absorb it all in and then expel it. So he can actually absorb real hurts, physical pain that people have, i.e. a broken arm, absorb that into himself, heal that person, and then purge himself of the pain. So that's what he calls spinning.
Very cool. And we get introduced into this. Now, is it a mythology that you came up with yourself, or is it something you took from another culture?
I just made it up myself. I mean, originally I didn't quite have a term for it. He was just healing people, and then it just came to me that that's what he wanted to call it, was spinning.
Okay. And it's a really intriguing use because even in the first chapter of the book, you encounter him using it on another character. And we always have people who are going to be healed by another character as very grateful and they kind of idealize that person and become, you know, best friends in some scenarios. But in this one, it seems like everybody kind of reacts to Alex in a very fearful way. Can you talk about why you decided to go that route with other people's reaction toward him?
Well, because I think it's a very unnatural thing. If you sit there and you have a bruise on your face and you tell somebody where the pain is and where it hurts and how it hurts, and then it just disappears and you have no more pain and there's no more bruise, that's pretty freaky, especially for other kids. And I think kids, that's how they react to something like that. It's not like, oh, wow, this is cool. It's like, this is scary. And the only Alex's friends really accept that he can do this, and it doesn't bother them. And maybe that's because they have disabilities and they're a little different on their own, and I think that's what binds them together, that they all have some differences.
Okay. Now, one of the characters that I really fell in love with, even in just a little bit that I've read of this book so far, is the character of Roy. Could you tell us a little bit about him?
Well, without giving too much away, Roy is Alex's best friend. They both share a love of emo music and emo dress clothing style, and Roy lives right down the street from where Alex moved. And Alex has been living near there for a little less than a year, and they just bonded. You know, Alex has never had a best friend, and really Roy never did either. Roy is also in special ed, and he's an outsider in other ways too, and they just fit together perfectly the way best friends should.
I totally agree, and I love that. The scene of them getting into the truck and Roy giving Alex the present, I think it's so heartfelt and it's so genuine. I think it also shows, obviously, did you grow up in the foster system, or was it just something that you've heard enough stories about? Because I felt like it gave a realistic portrayal of what it's like to live within that system. So was it something you had to do a lot of research to get into?
No, I've worked with kids most of my life that are incarcerated in juvenile hall or within the foster care system or the placement system. So I've heard all of these stories. And I know some readers might think, Alex would be like, I forgot about my birthday and I've never really gotten a birthday present before. That is absolutely true. I've given birthday cards to 17-year-old boys that started crying because they never had been given a birthday card in their lives. So it's very, very real, all of that.
So that just breaks my heart to hear things like that. I know it happens, and obviously I've watched many documentaries, and I've been involved enough with enough teenagers to know that this kind of stuff happens, but it still breaks my heart every time I hear it.
Me too.
So let's talk a little bit about your main villain for this particular book. Tell me a little bit about how you decided to build up that particular character.
Well, there are several. There, the house mother is who's Alex's foster mother, if you will, but she's more like a group home mother kind of thing, and she's very she's middle aged, very bitter woman, not happy with her life, and clearly has a problem with boys, with teenage boys. She does not like them, and that's part of the story that develops. You find out why she has a problem with them, but she treats them horribly. And even physically abuses them, and then makes Alex heal them. There are other villains that are lurking in the background. There is a very shady and sketchy substitute teacher who shows up, and the boys have to try to figure out what is her angle, what is she up to. And then there are others in the background who are stalking Alex. Because they want him for some reason. And I can't really go into more because it reveals too much of the story, and I wouldn't want to give away any spoilers. But
right.
There's a lot going on in terms of good versus evil.
Now, I do want to ask a little bit about the length. The average size of a YA book is, you know, between 200 and 300 words, unless you get into the collected volumes, which are becoming more and more popular. The length of this particular book is around 400 pages, and I just wanted to ask, when it came to the length of this book, what was your special consideration with making a book that length that was labeled as YA?
Well, you know, it's funny, a lot of my books are fairly long YA books. I have my Children of the Night series. These books are fairly long, and it's not a conscious decision. I set out to tell a story involving certain characters. I always know what the end game is. I know it's going to end, and therefore I can get to it. So I try to keep the story as tight as possible. And in this particular one in Spinner, there's a lot of subplots, and I guess I could have cut some of them out, but they all connect, and they all pay off, and you know, the publisher and I, we discussed it, and there was some talk about possibly breaking it up into smaller books, but it really wouldn't have worked very well because there's no real breaking point. The mystery, you know, there are too many mysteries that are unfolding. So it just the way that it developed. I mean, my new book that is not out yet, but that will be under 200 pages, and so also for kids. So it varies. It depends on the story.
Yeah. So let's go into that. When you're deciding, particularly in the YA genre, when you're deciding what kind of publisher you want to go with, what are your biggest factors in deciding something like that?
Usually it's whoever is willing to publish me. I mean, that's not a joke. I mean, it's very difficult. Big publishers, I mean, I tried really hard with Spinner to try to engage any of the larger publishers who would actually consider something without an agent. And I also tried engaging interest from agents and got nowhere. So it just so happened that this publisher knew of my other work, and they asked to read Spinner and they decided to publish it. I would not have thought to go with them, but they very graciously they liked the book and they wanted to publish it.
Awesome. Well, I mean, I'm an advocate of any YA getting out there, especially when it's kid YA. I just want to ask, because I'm putting out my own book, and I decided that I was going to go with the self-publication route. Is there a reason why you decided to go through a traditional publisher as opposed to self-publishing with this one?
Yeah. The first children published, other like indie publisher, a small one, it was really the wrong book for the wrong publisher. They didn't know what to do with it because their stock and trade is romance, and Children of the Night is not a romance. So they elected not to publish the four sequels that I had. So I self-published those and put them out, and they're out there. Honestly, I don't think it makes too much difference if you have a small publisher versus self-publishing, because the real key is promoting it to teenagers, and that seems to be the purview of the bigger publishers, because they can get it to school library journal and other major publications that will review the book. And we did try with Spinner to get school library journal to review it. We sent it in 3 months early like they want, and they apparently chose not to review it because nothing ever came out. And that's really the key to getting these books in front of teenagers, is that you need librarians to know about it.
Yeah. So what are some of the other works that you've mentioned a couple of other books that you've done, and you said that Spinner is your eighth book. Can you tell us a little bit about maybe some of the past projects that you've done, and then maybe towards the end of the review we can talk about some of the things that are coming up for you?
Okay, well, my first book was one I wrote many years ago while I was teaching and a little bit in the summer, called A Boy and His Dragon, and it's really more of a kind of a middle grade book, but it's very long, and it's sort of based on, it's set in 1970, you know, so it's based on when I was a kid, so, about a boy that finds a dragon egg in 1970, Northern California, and he has to hide this thing and raise it and try to, make sure nobody finds out about it. And it's obviously a fantasy. And then A Matter of Time involves time travel, involving some college students and the Titanic. And then I had the Children of the Night series, which is really based upon my work with all of the marginalized kids that I've worked with, the kids that are incarcerated, even a lot of the kids I've taught in school, the kind of kids that get kicked out of school that don't fit the norm. You know, that you get the kids is gang member, the kid's gay, or the kid is too difficult to, he doesn't toe the line, and so, you know, we kick him to the curb all the time. These are the kids that I probably know better than any others, because they're the ones I gravitate to and work with. So that whole series is about how King Arthur shows up in L.A., you know, having promised to return at some point in time, and he builds a new round table with these street kids. He gets all these kids that are on the streets, and he turns them into a kind of an army to challenge the status quo, to get more rights for kids in L.A. and then ultimately in the whole country. And that's what the series is about. And then and there were five of those books. And then Spinner is the newest one I have, which is book number 8. I think that covers all of them, yeah.
So you go pretty diverse as far as the type of genres that you want to get involved with. Are there any genres that you can't or won't write in?
Well, you know, it's funny. There is romance in those Children of the Night books. I mean, it's 5-book series. It spans like 4 years. People fall in love with each other and so on. But straight up just writing romance, no way. I'm sorry. It's just not a genre I like reading. It's too formulaic. So I wouldn't write that. And I wouldn't probably be able to write hard science fiction. I'm not that well-versed in science and physics, although I have friends that I could talk to. But that's probably a little too esoteric for me. But I do, you know, I like mystery. And like I say, Spinner's a mystery. But it's funny, I get ideas, and then I go with the idea. So it's really not – Children of the Night spans a bunch of genres, those books, and even Spinner does. I don't narrow it down to a genre. I just, I come up with a story idea and I tell the story, and then it's in whatever genre it falls in.
I think that that's awesome, because I think that we are getting into a market base that is much more, it doesn't need to be as separating as it is. It needs to be more collaborative within the genres. And I actually enjoy books that cross genres a lot more than the rules of any given genre, which is what you get into with some of the quote-unquote craft of writing type thing. What were some of the biggest challenges, because the Children of the Night series was a different creature than Spinner is, so what were some of the biggest challenges for you when it came down to writing Spinner as opposed to those books?
Actually, in many ways, my theory. And I hear stories, a little horror movie. If you're listening to rock and roll, I was listening to the soundtracks from horror movies. That was my music. I mean, I was a weird kid. I didn't fit in. So horror has always been a big love of mine. And I made horror movies. In fact, Spinner started originally as a screenplay idea. And then I decided, I'm going to turn it into a book, because I really always wanted to write horror. I loved reading horror stories and mystery stories. And so I just went with it, did it.
Okay. I'm a big fan of horror myself. I remember even as a teenager, the first books that I got into were Stephen King books, reading The It and Eyes of the Dragon, you know, even when I was 14 and 15 years old. So I very much identify with the horror genre, which is one of those that it's harder to find material in that genre, unless you go into, you know, dystopian, or you go into zombie, which either tend to be tame or, you know, absolutely graphic, and then you kind of put it down and get squicked out by it.
Well, as you mentioned that about the graphic, I just wanted to say that I personally don't like horror that's particularly graphic. I like horror that has good characters, good stories that are scary or suspenseful. That's what interests me.
Yeah.
I'm not a gore person. I really don't like the gory movies either.
Now, I do want to ask, particularly with the first scene, one of the first scenes that's in this book, there are a lot of people out there that are cat lovers. Have you had any cat lovers contact you about the attack of cats?
No, but I think I'd have to get some more readers first. I haven't had that many readers. No one has attacked me for having an evil cat in the story. However, I can't give away a spoiler, but you'll find out more about that cat at the end. So the cat lovers will be satisfied at the end of the book, let's put it that way.
Okay, fair enough. So, Michael, I want to let everybody know once again, if you want to buy a copy of Spinner, please, there is a buy link on this episode page, and there is also one on the YAA page of www.writersonlinenetwork.com. So please go to one of those buy links, buy a copy of Spinner. I'm sure that you will not be let down. It's a great story, really great character buildups. We only have a few more minutes left, but I want to give you a chance to talk about some of the things that you might have upcoming, either for the promotion of Spinner or for new books that you're working on.
I do have another book to Spinner starting Monday until the 26th on my page, social media. And then the other, I have a new project that's going to be coming out in November. It's actually a standalone to the Children of the Night books that's aimed more at middle school, and it deals with the whole climate crisis, the whole environmental destruction, pollution that we're doing to the planet, and the character Lance, who's in charge of New Camelot, now gets involved in this And it's a kind of an unusual thing because what I'm doing is I'm offering it to the United Nations Climate Education site and to any educators that want to use it in their classes. I'm offering the ebook for them for free. If they want to purchase paperbacks, they can contact me and they will get them at cost, you know, my cost. There's no profit involved because I think it's an important topic. And this is a short book. This one is under 200 pages and it's teaching. Kids can, while being entertained, they can learn an awful lot about what they can do in their own community to help make it more sustainable, help make their own lives cleaner, and be able to recycle more and understand more about what the issues are. So that's what's coming up in November.
That sounds awesome. I love books that I walk away from them and I feel like not only have I been entered and educated about something without being preached at, and that's definitely a difficult line to walk. I want to ask of when people read your stuff and they compare you to other authors or even authors that you would like to be compared to, who were some of the top authors that come to the top of your mind?
Well, I don't know. I don't think anyone's ever compared to another author, although actually one review of Spinner said that the story would make Stephen happy or something along those lines. Maybe it would. I don't know. But I don't like to try to be like other people or be compared to other writers. People tell me that the way that my books are written is very different from other people, other authors. And they can have a very unique style. So I think that's a compliment.
Sure, absolutely. Are there other writers that you read their books and go, this is a style I wouldn't mind emulating?
I like a lot of Stephen King, and I like the way he, at least a lot of it, would build his book, and then he would give these little kind of hints to something impending was going to happen, and I kind of like that. And so I do a little of that, I think, in my books too. But I don't know. I do read other books, but I do my own. I just it's not in me, I guess, to try to copy people's style. I don't know, not my thing.
Okay. Well, for anybody who's listening to this episode, what is the easiest way to reach out to you after they buy a copy of Spinner? And if they want to talk to you as an author, what is the best way for them to reach out to you?
Well, probably Facebook author page, which is Michael J. Bowler. You have to have the J in there because I also have a regular one, Michael Bowler. They can contact me on either one, message me. I do have a website, michaeljbowler.com, but then those messages take a little longer to get to me. So probably Facebook is the easiest way to get in contact.
Well, Michael, I want to say thank you so much for appearing today on YAA. Thank you for everybody out there that's listening to the show. We're so thrilled to have you as always. Please make sure that you check out the buy link, buy a copy of Spinner. Check out Michael's website. Find out about his other works as well. Please make sure you visit the website, www.writersonlinenetwork.com, and find out what you can do with the network around you. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Will. Appreciate it.
Have a great day.
You too.